While we're told to reduce, reuse, and recycle constantly from a young age, how much do we actually recycle out of the trash that we generate constantly on a daily basis? We're all guilty of generating waste and trash, and while we tell ourselves that we're responsible by placing it nicely in a garbage can instead of littering, where does that trash actually end up? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be breaking down the big business of trash. The average person produces 4.4 pounds of trash every day, and that trash includes everything from junk mail to food waste. Every minute, 3,825 tons of municipal waste are produced and collected. The largest share of this volume ends up in the landfills or open dump sites, putting enormous pressure on the environmental and wildlife habitats. Annually, our planet becomes home to about 2 billion tons of municipal solid waste, or MSW. This is comprised of all the items people use on a daily basis, include food packaging, electronics, batteries, bottles, etc. Now, the U.S. comes first in the list of countries with the highest amount of daily per capita MSW, followed by Canada at 2.3 kilograms per capita and Australia at 2.2 kilograms per capita. Now, in order to understand the cost associated with waste management, we have to break it down into its four main categories: container costs, collection costs, transfer costs, and landfill costs. First, containment costs are the costs associated with the different types of containers and trash bins used for collecting trash. Depending on the size, this can range between $10 to $300 a month. Then we have collection costs, which varies depending on your municipality and location, but this will be based on weight. This can range between $150 for 400 pounds all the way up to $300 for 1,600 pounds per collection. Next, the waste has to travel a long way before it reaches the landfill. You have to account for the fuel and transportation costs of getting it there. In many cases, the waste is first stored at a waste transfer station where it is stored and batched before being shipped to a landfill site. Finally, you have the landfill tipping fee, which is a charge levied against anyone who disposes waste in a landfill. Different landfills charge anywhere from $30 to $150 per ton. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch is an enormous pile of floating trash carried by ocean currents and winds to the Pacific Ocean between Hawaii and California. This is the largest of the world's five ocean garbage patches and is estimated to have grown to twice the size of the state of Texas. Now, despite all the recycling technology in use, less than 20% of waste is recycled annually, with the remaining 80% becoming a part of landfill sites. And now today, we're joined by Lily Pollins, professor of urban policy and planning at Hunter College. Now, Lily, how do waste management costs vary between different types of waste, such as municipal solid waste, hazardous waste, and electronic waste?
So from the municipal perspective, thinking from the point of view of a city government, there's basically the different cities will sort of divide the waste stream in different ways. So there are some places in the United States where everything is just garbage. So there's one collection, everything is treated as trash, and everything is disposed in the same way. But there are lots of places that will divide the waste stream into different categories. And that municipal waste stream includes everything that we throw away on a daily basis. So that's like all the material from our households, from businesses, from offices, basically everything that's not produced through an industrial process. And so certain municipalities will separate out various streams of recyclable materials, and every city does it differently in the U.S. So some places will separate out quite a number of materials, including food scraps and organic wastes, which will be treated in one way, and then plastics, glass, metals, papers might be treated in different ways as recyclable materials. And then some cities will also separate hazardous household wastes. So things like cleaning products and adhesives, paints, things that could be toxic if they were burned or buried. And then there's everything that's left out, everything that doesn't fit in those categories becomes trash.
Is recycling considered a cost-efficient and effective way to manage waste? And what are the factors that influence the efficiency of recycling programs?
This is a really complicated question. When recycling programs were first began as municipal waste management programs in the U.S., this started in the 1980s through the 1990s, there was this dream that recycling was going to reduce the costs of waste management significantly because there was going to be these sellable materials, commodities at the other end that could generate revenue. In practice, that happens occasionally, certainly with metals. Those have a secondary market, and they have high value. But with other materials, it's much more complicated. Many regions have good regional paper recycling, which allows them to generate some revenue from paper and cardboard. But in terms of glass, it's really heavy and difficult to transport, which adds a lot of costs. And in terms of plastics, there really are very few, if any, secondary markets for the products that come out of a recycling process. And so most cities have found that recycling is still a cost, sometimes even more expensive than waste disposal. But the programs are really popular politically, and it's difficult to cut them once they exist. And so a lot of times this is causing some financial stress for municipalities, certainly.
And can you discuss the innovations and technologies in recycling that are improving efficiency and reducing the environmental impact of waste disposal?
So there have been some improvements over recent years. There haven't been a lot of new technologies. What we have seen is certain processes have become more efficient. So it is possible, for instance, if a city sends a mixed recycling stream, the separation technologies have gotten more efficient. So it's easier. Materials can be separated more carefully, which results in cleaner streams of raw materials that go into some kind of recycling or remanufacturing process. The problem is those more efficient technologies are also more expensive, and most cities are not investing in those processes, which means that our streams are still highly contaminated and don't have a lot of value on the back end. I would say in the US context, we haven't really seen the benefit of improved efficiencies in terms of recycling technologies largely because cities haven't had the capital to invest in those more expensive processes.
Are there successful waste reduction and recycling initiatives for policies that have significantly reduced the overall cost of managing waste in specific regions or countries?
This is a great question. I research primarily the United States, so I can speak mostly to this market here. And what I have observed is that cities have really successfully reduced the amount of waste that's going to disposal. But it's not typically the costs that are saved in terms of waste transport and disposal. Those costs are shifted into other expenses. So those cities do a tremendous amount of public education, a tremendous amount of enforcement and communication with businesses and residents, and they're bearing a huge amount of effort. They have full staffs devoted to communication and education, and that's an ongoing project. It's not a single campaign or like one set of, highway billboards. Like this, these are ongoing costs that communities bear in order to achieve the goals of waste reduction. But there are cities that have done tremendously well with it, if they're willing to carry those costs. Particularly cities on the West Coast have done a really, really good job. And often what that means is not only being really careful about what and how, what materials they recycle and how they invest in those processes, but also actually investing in waste reduction, banning materials that like really can't be recycled, like styrofoam, for instance, banning materials that are really that tend to be really problematic in a waste sorting process, like plastic bags. The plastic that's used, that film to make plastic bags, is technically recyclable, but when it goes into a mixed waste stream, when it goes through the equipment that sorts the materials, it gets stuck and it shut. Like it'll cause like shutdowns in the equipment. It adds a lot of cost, and there's nothing to recoup on the other end, and there's no value to that material really once it gets to the other side. And so most cities won't accept that in their mixed streams, and certain cities have just banned the free distribution of plastic bags altogether. So these cities that have made the most progress are actually taking, they're kind of doing some downstream work and some upstream work simultaneously while also investing in communication. So it doesn't make it a lot cheaper. That's like there's I think that there's a hope or a wish for municipal governments that like that the waste reduction plan is a cost-saving plan. I think in the long term that's true, but in the short term the costs have to just be reallocated for other things. And ideally, in the end, that can lead us kind of towards a broader economic system that doesn't generate so much waste.
Thank you so much, Professor, but please stick around. Professor Lily Pollins will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, it is ironic that the high-income countries are the ones producing the most waste. We'll have more right after the break. High-income countries account for just about 16% of the world's population, yet they generate 34% of the world's waste. These developed nations have had a hard time dealing with their waste problems, so they choose to export it. The developed nations also have their green agendas and cannot just incinerate the waste without risking their burgeoning carbon footprint. In the EU, countries like Turkey and Greece are treated as dumping grounds for the wealthier members. Millions of tons of plastics are produced worldwide every year. And while half of this plastic waste is recycled, incinerated, or discarded into landfills, a significant portion eventually ends up in our oceans. Most of this plastic waste comes from the litter in parks, beaches, or storm drains lining our streets. But a large chunk of ocean plastic comes from damaged fishing nets or ghost nets that are directly discarded into the sea. While one might think that the countries producing or consuming the most plastics are the ones that pollute the oceans the most, but that is actually not true. According to a study, countries with a smaller geographical area, longer coastlines, high rainfall, and poor waste management systems are the ones most likely to wash plastics into the sea. For example, China generates 10 times the plastic waste that Malaysia does. However, 9% of Malaysia's total plastic waste is estimated to reach the ocean in comparison to China's 0.6%. The Philippines is estimated to emit 35% of the ocean's plastics at 356,000 metric tons, followed by India at 126 metric tons, Malaysia at 73,000, and China at 70,000. Many high-income countries generate high amounts of plastic waste, but are either better at processing it or exporting it to other countries. Meanwhile, many of the middle to low-income countries that both demand plastics and receive bulk exports have yet to develop the infrastructure needed to process it. Not long ago, China used to be the world's largest importer of global trash. The trash would mostly come from developed countries to be sorted and recycled in China. However, the global trash accumulation in China caused major pollution problems, so after 2018, countries started to ship their waste to other Southeast Asian countries. Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam became the major destinations for global trash. Other countries, including India, Sri Lanka, and others too, have had to help make up the void left by China. India used to be the second largest importer of U.S. scrap plastic, but it too announced a ban on most types of plastic trash import in 2019. Over 25 countries dumped 121,000 metric tons of plastic waste into India illegally, And recently, we've heard instances where countries like Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam all send garbage-filled containers back to the exporters trying to illegally dump mislabeled trash. Today, Africa is receiving a continuous stream of incoming containers filled with waste ever since Asia is now rejecting the West's garbage. The costs of the damage caused by marine plastic pollution in West Africa is estimated to be at around $10,000 to $33,000 per ton of plastic waste. Sectors hit hard by the plastic pollution are fisheries and the aquaculture waterfront property values and biodiversity and ecosystems. Africa has long been a destination for hazardous products and materials such as batteries or used electrical and electrical components, particularly in Ghana and Nigeria. So for this and more, let's bring in again Lily Pollins, Professor of Urban Policy and Planning at Hunter College. Now, Lily, some countries are known as dumping grounds for trash from other nations. So what are the environmental and economic implications of this practice, both for the receiving countries and the countries actually exporting the waste?
So I would say, like, currently in the United States, we would not have a plastics recycling program if there were not markets internationally that would accept those materials. Same with electronic waste and other waste streams. So currently the United States is kind of materially dependent on other international markets to accept those material streams. Over time, we have seen markets grow less absorbent, less willing to accept those materials, and that has really challenged the ability of our cities to execute their recycling programs. But it's that program of export is highly problematic. And there's been a lot of, you know, it's sort of obviously the receiving countries understand how problematic it is because the processes, as I mentioned before, those recycling processes are really polluting. They emit a lot of toxic waste in air and water pollution, and also very often just end up producing a material that can't be used and it has to end up getting burned for energy maybe or just landfilled. So it's like really locally problematic for the places where those materials land. In the US, we just haven't been paying attention. I would say most people are really unaware of the distance that our materials travel, and we don't really think about what it takes globally to sustain our like illusion of effective recycling programs. So I think that there's a big education to happen here to help people kind of see to what degree we're dependent on places being willing to accept this material, which doesn't do much but cause harm.
And are there international agreements or regulations aimed at addressing the issue of waste exports and preventing environmental harm in receiving countries?
There are. I mean, there are. We do have prohibitions on exporting waste. So one country cannot export waste to another. But we kind of avoid that by calling it recycling, because then in theory, it's the input for another industrial process. It's considered a commodity. But in reality, it's often just waste. So we export a lot of electronic materials in theory for recycling. We export a lot of plastics in theory for recycling. And they land often in like relatively unregulated markets. And as I said, the bulk of that material does end up as garbage. But we kind of evade the regulatory structure by calling it recycling and determining it to be a commodity, which I think is, you know, I don't know how long that will last. There's been a lot of work in kind of international mobilization to reduce the trade in plastics. So I haven't seen that have an impact yet, but it could.
Are there countries that export a significant amount of their waste to other nations? And what motivates these waste exports?
Well, I would say we see that kind of international trade happening in a variety of different ways. Like the US, Canada, countries that sort of high income countries tend to do more waste export because they're just generating more waste and they have the option of having it treated elsewhere. So, I mean, the US exports a tremendous amount and other high income countries do as well. Like within Europe, for instance, there are some countries that have really sophisticated waste to energy programs where they have a network of incinerators that burn their garbage but then capture some amount of energy. They're fairly well regulated, they're well maintained, they're, as far as incineration goes, they operate relatively cleanly. Those places are also net importers. So they're importing waste from mostly other European countries that need that don't have the space to do their own disposal.
And are there economic opportunities associated with waste management and recycling, such as job creation and the development of the recycling industries?
Yes, absolutely. As I said, I think that this is highly problematic as it relates to plastics, but there are other material streams where there's a tremendous amount of economic opportunity. For me, from my observation, I think the organic waste stream has the most there's the most to gain with development of infrastructure and processes for recycling. So organics recycling, there's a number of really effective technologies for breaking down food scraps and other organic wastes into products that have beneficial use. So you can compost that waste and it turns into a soil amendment, which is can help. We have a tremendous, internationally and especially in the United States, we have a tremendous loss of topsoil due to monoculture and other climatic changes, monoculture agriculture. And we need to rebuild our soils in order to sustain food production. So composting the waste is like a tremendously useful project. That requires a lot of space and not every city can invest in composting. You need like tons and tons of space to build, like it's generally just literally rows of organic materials that are slowly breaking down in contact with air. So some cities do it. Seattle, San Francisco, they compost a tremendous percentage of their organic wastes. For a city like New York, where I am, cities that are denser that don't have access to, you know, that kind of land. There are other technologies that are more suitable for urban application, like anaerobic processes that can happen inside. They can be combined with sewage treatment in some instances. Those processes reduce the quality of the output because there's kind of additional contamination. You can't use it for food production, but it's still much, much better to putting that material in a landfill and having it emit methane, a powerful greenhouse gas, as it breaks down. So those anaerobic processes can generate energy through natural gas. They generate methane, but unlike in a landfill, it can be captured and used for energy, which replaces fracked gas. So there's all kinds of benefits upstream and benefits downstream, depending on how that material is used. And there also are really strong markets. Like there's a need for soil amendment. There's a need for the products that come out of these processes. And it's so much better environmentally than just landfilling or even waste to energy incineration. And there's a lot of job opportunity there too, because these processes require labor. And they're often, they sometimes are a little smelly, but they are like safer in terms of chemical exposure than something like plastics recycling.
Thank you so much, Professor, for all your time today. Today, every country is striving to keep waste out of their landfills and attempting to boost their recycling programs. Yet, for a business considering the cost of waste management, recycling is just another expense that gets added into operational overhead that is more expensive than trash disposal. Many municipalities have come to the same conclusion that recycling is more expensive and barely even worth it. The reason for this is rooted in the global market for scrap material, the price of oil, and our continued reliance on cheap single-use products. Previously, China bought recyclables at a cost that helped to offset the global recycling schemes in exporter countries. But after 2018, China stopped buying recyclables from overseas, and the price of scrap material plummeted as exporting nations were left with waste that no one wanted, having relied on China instead of investing in domestic recycling facilities. So until more money is spent to upgrade and invest in recycling infrastructure, recycling will continue to be viewed as a burden on businesses. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.